Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
So you're driving down the road in your Chevy Malibu, and there in the passenger seat beside you is none other than the President of the United States. The road's got potholes and huge warning signs, but you keep your pedal to the metal till Barack Obama reaches over, shows you the door, and takes the wheel. Let's hope he's a really good driver. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. And by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build stronger customer relationships through email marketing. ConstantContact.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us on this Monday. It is the 30th day of March. Okay, so it's a little more complicated than that, and President Obama won't actually be running General Motors. But Chrysler and GM have had months, some would argue years, to figure out how to have a future in the world auto business. They've had a mandate, since accepting billions in taxpayer bailout money in December, to come up with a plan, or else. Well, today the president announced it was time for the else.
Now, we cannot continue to excuse poor decisions. We cannot make the survival of our auto industry dependent on an unending flow of taxpayer dollars. These companies and this industry must ultimately stand on their own, not as wards of the state.
Rick Wagoner is out as CEO of General Motors. The administration gave Chrysler 30 days to work out a merger with Italy's Fiat. Meanwhile, the administration said the government will back all warranties issued by the automakers. Joining us with some more details is Austin Goolsbee, a senior White House economist and also a member of the administration's automotive task force. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Now, the White House has said it was dissatisfied with GM and Chrysler's progress in turning themselves around. What are they not doing?
Well, in the plans they presented, they embraced some of the restructuring that they're going to need to do. But if you sat down and look at the numbers, what the auto team believed is that they had not presented a plan that was truly viable to make them a profitable enterprises going forward.
What went into the decision to ask for the resignation of GM CEO Rick Wagoner?
Well, the basic view that the president has had is that we need a change of direction. They need a new vision for the company. The government just can't afford, as the president said, we're not going to make these companies wards of the state to just keep them alive no matter what. The government can help them to restructure, but it's not going to be in the business of running an auto company.
Now, I have to ask you, because this is a question on lots of people's minds today, why was Mr. Wagoner forced to leave, but the chiefs of Bank of America, Citibank, they're still in charge of their companies?
Well, I would say two things. One, this is a situation in which we've had one round in which the auto companies received money to come up with restructuring plans, and those restructuring plans did not go far enough. And now the president is outlining that they need to be more aggressive in their restructuring plans, and there needs to be new leadership and a new vision of where these companies are going. In many of the financial institutions, you have seen changes of leadership at AIG, at Fannie, at Freddie, and some of the others. So I guess I don't agree that it's really a distinct approach.
There are lots of auto dealers and parts suppliers who are pretty concerned about the changes at GM over the weekend. What can you tell them?
Well, in the last week or two, the government has recognized what the issues are facing these companies in restructuring, and so it came out with an explicit support program for suppliers that would guarantee their payments in a variety of circumstances so that they would not be nervous about providing supplies to the domestic auto manufacturers, even if they were going through a restructuring. And you saw the president announce that we're putting the full weight of the U.S. government behind the warranties, the consumer warranties for these cars, and taking a series of other measures that people should not view this as the end, but instead as the beginning, that the effort is to try to put these companies on a path to viability as opposed to becoming wards of the state that are just going to have to depend on taxpayer dollars to live.
Austin Goolsbee is a senior White House economist and also a member of the administration's automotive task force. Thank you.
Thank you.
Analysts say the administration seems to be paving the way, the final miles, if you would, toward bankruptcy for the struggling car makers. There's been lots of debate about what bankruptcy would mean for an industry that craves and lives on customer loyalty. Even with government-backed warranties, can you be sure your 08 Chevy will have a mechanic around in 10 years? Our senior business correspondent Bob Moon says it might just be the quickest route toward ending the company's long and painful journey.
Bankruptcy experts say Chapter 11 protection would actually help the car makers. Lynn Lopucki is a bankruptcy law professor at UCLA. He says they could purge themselves quickly of some of their most pressing financial burdens.
As a practical matter, it's just much faster, much more certain to go into bankruptcy, do what you've got to do, and get out.
Lopucki says it could take forever to bargain with bondholders and other creditors, but bankruptcy judges have the power to force resolutions.
If you're outside of bankruptcy, everybody thinks of it as a compromise situation. We're going to get what we're entitled to and something more to get us to go along. If you go into bankruptcy, they don't get the something more.
Harvard Law professor Mark Rowe says bankruptcy protection could also help the automakers trim down their product lines.
That means they've got to renegotiate or terminate their relationship with a lot of dealers. That's going to be easier to do in Chapter 11 than it is outside of Chapter 11.
Rowe says bankruptcy wouldn't necessarily make the ripple effect for parts suppliers any worse than it is now, since sales are already way down. And UCLA's Lynn Lopucki doubts warnings that bankruptcy could scare customers away. He questions what's worse.
To buy a car from a bankrupt company than to buy a car from a company that should be in bankruptcy but doesn't know enough yet to know that it needs to be there.
He points out the government will now guarantee GM and Chrysler warranties for new car buyers. Harvard's Mark Rowe says combine that with stronger companies emerging from bankruptcy protection, and their situation certainly looks better than the alternative.
Bankruptcy is a last resort, but we've reached that.
I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
So the automakers themselves aren't the only ones feeling the pressure today. The big three are fed by all kinds of other businesses, not least of which, as we've heard, is auto parts suppliers. And then there's the effect of GM and Chrysler's woes on other, healthier car companies. Gene Jennings is editor-in-chief of Automobile Magazine. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's talk about some of these knock-on effects from the announcements today regarding GM and Chrysler. Let's start with the third of the big three, Ford. What have they been doing these last several months, you know, while the other two took bailout money and just kind of got sicker and sicker?
Well, Ford was already looking pretty good. They had been getting their ducks in a row for quite some time before this really went down.
Right.
They, for instance, sold off virtually every brand other than Volvo that was not a Ford brand. What they wanted to do was just focus on the Oval. The second thing they did was actually mortgage everything, including the Blue Oval, to amass a large amount of cash, seeing that money was going to get tight pretty darn soon. So they not only have money, they have money at a very good rate.
Then taking a look at what may be happening in the future to GM and Chrysler, what would a bankruptcy of either of those mean for Ford?
It would mean that no one would be able to build cars in the United States for at least a year. That means no Japanese, none of the Europeans that are building, and not Ford, because of their great dependence on a supplier industry that would just crash and burn. It takes the loss of one part to shut the whole thing down.
Once so it's
again,
all about the auto parts at this point.
It's all about the parts.
Yeah.
All about the parts.
Well, Gene, let me ask you to kind of look in your crystal ball and tell us maybe what this market is going to look like in a year. Will there be a Detroit Big Three?
We know that there will be Ford because, as I said, they've put their ducks in a row, and it's meant a lot to the average consumer out there. My 79-year-old aunt in New Orleans knows that Ford didn't take the money, so they must be doing okay, right? So they have product. They are poised. for when things turn around. The Fiat deal,
without
Chrysler? Fiat, Chrysler has nothing. With Fiat, they have Fiats. So I would say things will be a little dark and sketchy at Chrysler if there's a Fiat deal. Without a Fiat deal, it's finished.
And GM?
It will get parsed out. General Motors is such a huge company. I would expect that now they will do the hard job of eliminating as many brands as possible. Dealers will be going out of business, and there'll be a lot of pain and suffering.
Gene Jennings is the editor-in-chief of Automobile Magazine. Thanks so much for steering us through today's news.
Thank you.
On Wall Street, it wasn't just the auto industry, but banks. Yes, them again, bothering investors. Remember way back last week when the Dow shot up almost 500 points? Yeah, never mind. We'll have details when we do the numbers. For potential homeowners who say they've had trouble getting a bank loan for a mortgage these days, the advice of the last few months has centered around three letters, FHA. Federal Housing Administration loans accounted for almost a third of all the mortgages issued in the last 3 months of last year. FHA loans have proven popular because of the low down payment required, sometimes as little as 3.5%. But as Marketplace's Steve Henn tells us, the agency is dealing with some of the same problems that plagued the subprime market.
The FHA announced today that delinquencies among loans it insures have shot up in the past year, and the number of loans in default increased by more than 0.5% in just 1 month. Guy Sakala is publisher of Inside Mortgage Finance. He says the FHA could end up needing a $100 billion bailout before this recession's over.
All we can be sure of is that anybody who's involved in the mortgage market in a major way is going to see increased liability, if not defaults, down the road. That's just the given.
Sakala says it's no surprise FHA's defaults are rising when the whole economy is tanking.
It's not rocket science to figure that out. You increase your business when housing prices were declining and foreclosures were on the rise.
And it was inevitable that you'd get burned. But Brian Chappell, a former FHA employee who's now a consultant, says the FHA is also doing a pretty bad job policing fraud and managing its risks.
That is the number one job that the new commissioner must get their arms around.
In the past 2 years, tens of thousands of mortgage brokers fled the subprime market and got licensed to make FHA loans. In 2005, the agency insured just 3% of all loans in America. Now it guarantees a third of all loans. Chappell says the FHA is supposed to prop up the real estate market in tough times.
Because if we didn't have the program the last 2 years, we would be really in much worse shape.
But Chappell says if the FHA doesn't start doing a better job weeding out bad brokers and stopping fraud, it could be headed for trouble. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
And now let's do the numbers. Not quite the same Monday as last week's rally. The Dow peeled off 254 points, 3.25% to end at 7522. The Nasdaq shed 43 points, 2.8% to wind up at 1501. The S&P 500 fell 28 points, 3.4% to finish at 787. U.S. stocks fell the most they had in 3 weeks after the Obama administration soundly rejected turnaround plans from General Motors and Chrysler. GM plunged more than 25%. Ford Motor, which hasn't required bailout money, suffered a scratch of about 2.8%. On the banks, Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner said they're going to need another big dose of government aid. J.P. Morgan Chase parted with more than 9%. Citigroup kissed nearly 12% goodbye. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals, institutions, and advisors reach their long-term financial goals at Vanguard.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet. Missed anything from our special financial crisis coverage? You can listen to the entire show or get our After the Bell podcast, a weekly download of the business stories you need to know. Just go to marketplace.org and click on the podcast link.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. The Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee holds the second of two hearings on health insurance industry practices. A House committee discusses green jobs and their role in our economic recovery. And in Paris, the Eiffel Tower turns 120. The monument is repainted every 7 years and takes 15 to 18 months to complete. That'll keep you busy. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdal. As we discussed earlier, the Obama administration forced General Motors CEO Rick Wagoner to resign this weekend as part of the government's effort to save the ailing automaker. The firing by any other name was positioned as being in the best interests of GM's future. But with or without Wagoner, GM's future remains in question. Commentator Kevin Hassett says there may be more politics than economics at work here.
President Obama has a huge political debt to the unions, and that's why he's avoiding the obvious solution to the auto crisis. Historically, failing American companies like GM have entered bankruptcy. In bankruptcy, they either liquidate or, if the firm's worth saving, reorganize. Bankruptcy reorganizations are painful for stakeholders. Hard-nosed judges give workers, managers, and debtors severe haircuts in order to reshape a firm into a new organism that can thrive again. But bankruptcy can work. Most everyone has flown on an airline that's emerged from a successful bankruptcy. This economic crisis is unique in history, in that troubled firms have sought protection from politicians rather than bankruptcy courts. Why? Because if you're politically connected, you can expect a much better deal from politicians than you'd ever get from a worldly and experienced bankruptcy judge. GM's in deep trouble mostly because the United Auto Workers have festooned the company with rigid work rules and extravagant costs. The 2007 collective bargaining agreement, for example, required the automaker to pay up to $140,000 in severance to a worker whose position was eliminated. And that's nothing compared to the enormous health care costs these companies are laden with. The average cost of employing a worker at the Big Three, including benefits, was nearly twice that of Japanese automakers. No wonder the automakers are hemorrhaging cash. A bankruptcy judge would bring some reason to labor costs and create a GM that could emerge stronger. But the unions have a better idea. They plan to use taxpayer money to fund their juicy compensation. And they know they can count on Obama and the Democrats to help them. All told, organized labor contributed over $74 million in the 2008 campaign cycle. 92% of that went to Democrats. History will tell a simple story about GM. Union bosses successfully negotiated sweetheart packages that destroyed GM's competitiveness. If Obama was serious about creating an enterprise that can thrive in the future, he would have demanded that the union bosses resign along with Wagoner. Instead, it's payback time.
Kevin Hassett is the director of economic policy studies at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C. Your thoughts? Write to us at marketplace.org. You've heard it most of your life. A college education is an expensive but undeniably worthwhile down payment on the rest of your life. Well, as that down payment gets more and more expensive, some families are wondering if going into deep debt for an education is really worth it. At a suburban high school in Maryland, money is a key factor in students' decisions about which college to attend. Emily Hanford of American Radio Works reports.
These came today, and my mail is sitting over there.
Kathy Moore is sifting through scholarship brochures. She's the college counselor at Blake High School in Montgomery County, Maryland, just outside of Washington. Her walls are covered with banners and flyers from colleges all over the country. One promotional poster says, "Everyone can afford Duke." But this year, even wealthy families aren't so sure, and students from those families are coming to her and saying,
My parents say I got to start filling out scholarships.
Okay, so I'll do the application right
but
now.
But if you don't get anything into FAFSA right now, they don't even know you exist. Okay.
Moore has a line of students waiting to ask questions. She says there wasn't as much focus on money in the past.
There were more kids who rolled through here and said, I'm not going to Maryland. I'm getting out of Dodge. I'm going to be adventuresome. My parents said I could.
And often it was parents pushing the prestigious schools, but
that kind of push isn't happening anymore. If the kid wants to go to Maryland, by all means, go.
And even state schools can be a stretch. The average cost is close to $15,000 a year, more in Maryland. Some parents have lost jobs or homes, but mostly everyone's just edgy and anxious. Spending a lot on college feels like more of a risk now.
A lot of my friends, they're getting to schools that they really wanted to go to, but then like when they think about the money, they're like, this is unrealistic. I'm probably not going here.
For Natasha Gordon, it was all about money from the start. Mrs. Moore told her about a full tuition scholarship at Lafayette, a private college in Pennsylvania. She applied. She got it.
And I was like, well, the money's here with Lafayette, and I did like the school, so I don't think I'm losing anything if I choose to go there.
She never really let herself dream about anywhere else. She knows her family can't afford big tuition.
It's not like we're struggling, but we don't have it like that. So it's like we're right in the middle, so you kind of got to watch and make sure that you don't fall under.
Natasha's friend Katitra Mallard says cost was not the main thing on her mind when visiting colleges last summer. Instead, she was marveling at how fancy everything was. New buildings, beautiful dorms, even good food.
The food was amazing.
She had her sights on a college in South Carolina. But at $30,000 a year, her mother says,
that's off the table. $30,000 is scary.
Connie Pearsall once thought she'd have the money to send her daughter where she wanted. 5 years ago, she bought a condo when everyone was flipping real estate. That's what she planned to do. But now the condo's not worth what she paid for it. And while she has a good job and she's not really worried about being laid off, the economy has her spooked. And her credit card debt freaks her out.
I just want to get rid of it all because, and I don't spend.
She says her daughter is now looking at a less expensive school. They're waiting to find out what financial aid they'll get. And Pearsall says if it includes loans, Katitra is going to have to pay them back herself after graduation.
So typically for the admissions process, you have to go to the campus. But if you can fill out that application and hand it in to Ms. Moore by February 20th.
Back at Blake High School, a recruiter from Montgomery College has set up a table in front of the counseling office. It's the local community college. You can take a full load of classes for a year for less than $4,000. Kathy Moore is encouraging her students to just fill out an application.
Have this in your back pocket. You could be accepted to all your four-year schools, and if it turns out that your family can't follow through and it's too expensive, you always have MC to fall back on.
Most students tell her there's no way they're going to community college. Moore just smiles.
All right, buddy.
I'm Emily Hanford for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, we'll go to the community college where classrooms are packed with students seeking a cheaper path to a college degree. The Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme keeps rippling beyond our shores. Today, an Irish hedge fund sued to recover $3 billion. Charities and foundations here in the U.S. still appear to be among Madoff's biggest victims. Several were forced to shut down. Others are struggling to fill gaps in funding. Some of Madoff's victims gathered in St. Petersburg, Florida recently, where they talked to Marketplace's Amy Scott.
Even the Florida sunshine couldn't drive away the clouds hanging over the annual meeting of the Jewish Funders Network. Many of the foundations at the conference have lost 30% or more of their money from the market downturn. And then there's the wreckage left by Bernie Madoff, who specifically targeted the Jewish community.
We have one member who lost $1 billion just in their foundation.
Mark Cherendoff is president of the Jewish Funders Network. He says the group's members didn't just lose billions of dollars.
For the people here, for people of wealth, it's very hard to find people you trust. Everyone wants something from them. So you end up, the only way you can live your life is you find this little circle of people that you trust and you rely on them. Here's a man who broke into that circle by saying, no, I don't want anything from you. I'm one of you. It's not just that money was lost, and that fabric of community, which is really very precious, was betrayed.
One of Madoff's most famous victims is Elie Wiesel, the keynote speaker at the conference. He survived the Holocaust and won the Nobel Peace Prize. Wiesel's charitable foundation and personal wealth were nearly wiped out by the Madoff fraud. He says supporters have made up for some of those losses.
We had hundreds and hundreds of people on the internet sending in small amounts, $5, $10, so it was heartwarming.
Many nonprofit groups that depend on donations from Jewish philanthropists were at the conference. Miriam Lazary is with an Israeli group called the Ayalim Association. It promotes the settlement of the Negev and Galilee regions of Israel. She says her group lost $800,000, about 20% of its budget, when the Chase Family Foundation closed. Chase had invested all its money with Madoff.
It changed us from being a very stable and long-term plans to not knowing what will happen the next day and fighting every month to find the paychecks.
I spoke with Lazary at a networking event that put nonprofits together with potential funders. Rabbi Seth Farber was there promoting E-Team. It's a group that helps Jews navigate the religious establishment in Israel.
What I'm holding here is life cycle manuals.
Farber says several of his donors were hit by Madoff. He came here looking for new support, but wasn't encouraged.
It's pretty evident to me that I'm not going to bring on any new funders in this kind of environment.
The Jewish Funders Network has created a crisis loan fund to help nonprofits hurt by the Madoff fraud, but it may be a long time before some members can put the disaster behind them. The IRS is looking at taxing board members of private foundations that invested with Madoff. A court-appointed trustee could go after foundations and charities that made money from the Ponzi scheme. The recovered cash would help pay back other investors. In St. Petersburg, Florida, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing absolute return funds for all kinds of investors. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
And this final note, anybody else want to be the fly on that wall when Madison Avenue is coming up with marketing campaigns that target women? Apparently they think we're really into sexy candy bars these days. The tagline is naughty but not that naughty for a new low-cal chocolate bar dubbed The Fling. It's the first candy bar from Mars in almost 20 years. The ads promise that your boyfriend doesn't need to know, because apparently boys get really jealous of sugar and partially hydrogenated oils, and we don't hide enough from them already. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow dropped 254 points, 3.25%, to end at 75.22. The NASDAQ lost 43 points to close at 15.01. The S&P fell 28 points to close at 7.87. Our producers include Caitlin Carroll, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Eng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Next time on the program, cash-strapped students are leaving universities for community colleges.
When I was at school, I always watched the news like every day, and then I kept on seeing economies going down, da da da. And then they were talking about how loans would be harder to get and how all these things would happen. I got fearful, and I was like, I'd rather not risk it. I'd rather be safe.
I'm Tess Vigeland. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.